everybody. It's Gija Mina here with Real Talk, Our Journey. And I have my girls with me today, Siobhan and Lynn. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. One day at a time, right?
Exactly. Hello, ladies. How's everyone doing today?
Good. Today we have with us a special guest. I wanted to introduce and welcome Delisi Washington. She's a licensed clinical social worker with us. How are you and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I am happy to join you guys, and I'm happy that it's Real Talk because that's what I'm all about. So I'm already having fun.
Awesome. So we just wanted you to take a moment if you would share with us a little bit about yourself and the work that you're doing as a licensed clinical social worker for those that are unaware.
So I am actually a licensed clinical social worker that is in private practice, but a lot of my work in the past has been in health settings, and I've been fortunate to be able to work with children as young as 2, and then all the way to adults, honestly, in their final days of life due to illness or for other reasons. Right now, I'm also bilingual, and so my primary service is immigration evaluations through my practice. And that just means that when families are facing hardship based on a family member who may be facing deportation or if they've been separated, then we get to have an honest conversation about their entire life history and what it would mean if they are separated or what it's been like being separated from a family member. So I hear a lot of real life stories and I hear a lot of hope, but I hear a lot of distress.
Wow. Thank you for your work. I'm bilingual myself, so woo-woo to that.
Yeah. I'm a social work major. Woo-woo!
Yay to social work. It's really an honor. I've been able to serve in so many capacities, and so it's neat.
That's awesome. That's great. So we wanted to recognize for the month of September is Suicide Prevention Month Awareness, and we just wanted to have some conversations in regards to suicide prevention. It is, of course, always on the forefront on everything that everyone goes through in their life and their journey, but more so now that we are in this pandemic and some of the services that were or may have been readily available for individuals. It's a little bit difficult now with the isolation of the pandemic. So I just wanted to pick your brain on what are your thoughts in regards to that, in regards to how the services may have changed prior COVID to where we are now with COVID.
So I think I'll shed light on what we know is this, I call it a crisis, like not to be negative, but I also want to shed light on some of the positives. So I'll start with some of the negatives. We know, hands down, nationally facing a pandemic, that any systems that were in place before, if there are any vulnerabilities, then it's going to be heightened during the pandemic. And so that's what we've seen. We're really concerned about our mental health because there's a lot of uncertainty. We're concerned about all systems and how families are accessing those systems. And we've seen the breakdowns. And so with that level of uncertainty, there's just this heightened level of anxiety, sadness, whatever it may be. So there are like direct consequences of the pandemic. Like we know people are getting sick with COVID, but then we also know there's a lot of like the secondary things that are going down and things that families may have been dealing with before COVID. And now they're trying to figure out how they're going to take care of that. And then things that have been brought on because of the pandemic. And due to time, we won't get into all of those little details, but we know that services quickly had to change. So that meant that, let's say, for someone who looked forward to getting out of their home, out of the stress of their home to get the services they needed, now maybe they were getting it in their home or maybe didn't even have that access. And so when I say positives is that I've also experienced many families where now they said, that's it, I need help, and they sought out a way to get it. And we know that counseling centers, health centers, they've gone telemedicine, telehealth, they are connecting with families however possible. Phone calls, they're using HIPAA-compliant privacy platforms. And so it seems that there has been a good response in trying to get those services to families. But again, I'll repeat that some of our most vulnerable families are the ones that may not even have access to those services in that way. So I've seen some people connect more and they find it more comfortable. They've made more time to connect because they realize that they just can't continue. It's not sustainable, not reaching out or not getting the help they need. And so I know someone who was dealing with addiction in their home and they just decided, all right, that's it. I'm going to find an Al-Anon group. And there's a virtual option. And so it made it easy to, I've told my clients, if you need to hide in a bathroom, do what you need to do under a bed, in your closet. There's a way to connect and there's a way for you to find that piece you need. And even if it's 10 minutes instead of 30 minutes. So I think that answers some of your questions.
No, you did. And you shared some wonderful information, as you said, with the positive, you know, individuals that may not have had the time before because their life was a little hectic or didn't take the time to reflect a little bit, that they're able now to reach out and get the services. And so that's great. That is a positive. Do you feel that anything has changed? And not, my question is more towards youth as far as services for the youth. Has there been a lot of positive for the youth to receive services for young adults and our teens with the anxiety of doing virtual school, so that, you know, socialization they had before being in school with their friends and then getting the support that they had in the schools, plus their counseling if they received it, and their families or guardians or their household makeup. Now they've lost some pieces of that doing virtual school. So are there similar services or for our youth or young adults?
Yeah, I would say, so I can only speak to my experience between what I know with Delaware, Pennsylvania, where I practice. And so I would say, yes, we've also seen schools step up and try and offer added resources. I know at the end of the previous school year, because now we're starting the new school year. So when it was all going on, I know there were calls that were being made to families to check on them. And what I heard was that some families were like, look, I don't need a call, leave me alone. And other families were very grateful to have that added level of check-in. We also know grassroots efforts or volunteers. I used to work with a group and they actually ended up having a parent group. And they also had an adolescent group. And not to mention the pandemic, we are in the midst of, it almost feels like we're back to civil rights movement, but the Black Lives Matters movement, it's worth mentioning that. That was certainly heightened and I'm happy it was. And so I also saw resources being provided for students from that realm and making sure that they were having the conversations they needed to have. And because we're talking about suicide, mental health, I say it's powerful. Even if we're dealing with intense information, difficult information, discouraging information, we have to talk about it. Because if we face the truth, then we have power over it. If we keep ignoring it, shutting it down, trying to ride with it like it's okay, that's when we actually end up feeling more defeated and actually kind of being defeated. And that is what happens with suicide, where we just end up in this place where it feels that they're legitimately so is no hope, no way out of the hole, and it's too much to take. And so I always say we have to face the truth and we have to know that we can handle it. And we get to move forward, we start thinking a little more creatively, and we don't have to do it alone.
Powerful words right there, facing the truth. Thank you for that. I didn't know if the girls wanted to ask anything or talk about anything as far as maybe something they've experienced or their journey.
No, I just would like to ask your take on, since this is Suicide Awareness Month, what are some suggestions that you would have for parents? Because, you know, being at home with your child, trying to work a full-time or part-time job, but also be there to be supportive for your child. It is very frustrating. And I'm a mom of, I have a senior this year, but I also have two toddlers that I have at home. So I'm grateful that my older daughter can do her own schoolwork, but it is.
Oh, I think Siobhan had a little bit of technical difficulties.
I'm also a mom of young ones. And if this is real talk, I'm getting to know myself in a wildly different way. Like, I thought I was really patient. I didn't realize that, you know, I could really scream now. So just to be, you know, and everyone's different, right? But when we know we're not functioning at our best, this is not the best case scenario. And so we kind of have to be forgiving. If I get stuck in that shame and guilt, guess what's going to happen? I'm in that negativity. The next 30 seconds, I may snap again because I'm in that shameful place. Instead of saying, you know what, I'm try again in the next moment. And that makes me respond better to whatever comes. But Siobhan, I think, is back. So I definitely want her. I want to hear what else she was asking or saying.
Oh, did I disappear? I'm so sorry. No, I am so sorry, ladies. I didn't even realize it. So just being at home, like you just said, you have those moments where you're just like, oh my God, is this really happening? Like, I'm ready to snap. I want to snap. I can't do all this. Like, as moms, we wear so many hats, but to have to wear them all at the same time, it's very overwhelming. So I appreciate what you just said as far as like taking a moment and just saying, I'm not going to stay in this negative place. Just give me a second and let me try again. So I'm grateful that you did say that, because those are some things that sometimes when you're overwhelmed in that moment, it's just like, wait a minute. Just, you know, all right, let's do this. So I guess I appreciate you saying that, basically. But as I was saying, I don't even know if you heard that part. I have a senior and two toddlers that I'm also working with. So, but I'm one of those fortunate moms that gets to get out of the house for a little while, as opposed to being home doing homeschooling and working full time. So that's all I really had to say. You just answer my question.
I do think that we have an opportunity to model for our children what we're feeling. They're feeling it. They're feeling different things. They may be doing things that are out of character as well, because that's the way that they're expressing what's going on in their little worlds. And so it's okay to say, like, to tell them, like, I didn't mean to scream at you, and like explain that we got to take a step back and let's try to do it differently. And how can we work together? Because what I worry about, going back to, we need to face what it is. I worry that in the society, we kind of function on what I call emotional numbing. Like, we're either acting like everything's okay, or we're either going to express that in anger, or we're going to isolate. That's usually the typical response, right? Instead of just calling it what it is and saying, oh, I'm frustrated about this, or I'm annoyed by this, or I'm sad by this, like actually labeling some of those emotions. And if we could model that for our kids, they also know that they can have that. Instead of expecting them, like if they get an attitude, it's like, all right, I get it. Instead of having an argument about the attitude they had when really we're all stressed out and it was something that they needed to process. I'll leave it at that. I'm sure we'll come back around to something.
It's interesting you said to take a step back, because that's one of the things my old, so I have a 17-year-old and a 10-year-old. And one of the things that my 17-year-old and I do is when we realize we're hitting that point, we'll just say, I need a breather. And we know to walk away and let that person take a moment, collect themselves, and then we can talk about it. But I think the other piece that was powerful that you said too is just to have that conversation with your kids and be transparent with them and not hide what you're going through as far as your emotions and how you're feeling, because then kids won't be able to have that conversation with you, or they'll feel that they need to hide it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to stress their parents out, so they're going to say they're fine because they think mommy's stressed, or dad, or anyone in your household that's helping there. So I think having the honest conversation with kids, it's very good to letting them know it's okay to be frustrated or sad or want to scream because the Zoom keeps cutting off in the middle of something. So I understand that, and that's a great point.
And everything I'm mentioning, it applies to any age. Obviously, it applies a little differently, but we know that suicide is very real for adolescents, just as it is for older adults, and just as it is for any adult. And obviously with our younger kids, I think it's different just developmentally, but they can feel overwhelming feelings that they can't put into words. So I'm not sure how much we want to go into the suicide. I'll say suicidal ideation, like when someone is contemplating or thinking, I can't go on anymore, I can't handle this, it's too much, when they may have a plan. Like, you guys tell me how deep we want to go with that, because I don't want to miss the opportunity given that it's Suicide Prevention Month.
Well, can we start with, what are some of the signs that we should, that individuals should to be aware of for someone that they feel may be in trouble or having thoughts or need to have a conversation? What signs would someone look for?
That's a tough one. Okay. And I say it's tough only because sometimes it could be a thought that comes on almost impulsively or like on a really, really bad day. Or sometimes you can have someone where they've really been thinking about it for months, weeks, years. It may be something that's always kind of just in their head, whether or not. And it's important to know that there's different like levels, right? So if you guys think about a terrible day, and sometimes we say things that may sound terrible, like, oh, I wish I could just run away. Or, and right. So for one person that says that may not be a big deal, but for another, it may be like, for real. I don't know where. I've heard so many clients say, I just wish I could escape. I don't even know to where, but I just don't want to deal with this right now. So there's a distinction between passive suicidality and active suicidality. So really quick, passive suicidality is when someone is actually having thoughts about being better off dead, or that they maybe don't want to go on anymore, maybe want to hurt themselves, but they don't necessarily have the intention or the plan that they're actually going to carry out anything. And then active would be when someone is actually considering, what are the ways that I can make this happen? What are the ways that I can end my life? When can I do it? What would that mean? And so some of the signs include, if you have someone making comments that either seem too negative, or that they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. So just to give you that generally, right? If you have someone that's really isolating, because sometimes they're not talking. So that's why I'm like, it's kind of hard. I'd rather people think about their own mental health and how they're communicating and reaching out versus trying to think that we can prevent someone else's suicide. Now, I do think little acts of kindness and modeling that behavior, if I'm open and vulnerable with you, guess what's going to happen? You're going to return that. If I tell you one day I'm feeling really bad and overwhelmed, I increase the likelihood that you're actually going to communicate with me and tell me when you're having a bad day. So in a sense, that is things you're doing for yourself ends up helping a person or another person in your life that might be struggling. And don't be afraid to ask the question directly. Like, you look really done. Like, the way you're talking, like, I feel like you're losing hope here. And I get that. Tell me more about it. Or where are you? I've had friends and I've said, are you legit thinking like you want to end it all? And it opens up. Now, you have people that if they are really, really serious about dying, they may fake the funk. They may not tell you. But if you communicate your intentions, the hope is that they will reach out and there will be something that will stop them from taking steps to hurt themselves. Warning signs, right? So
yeah. Or just something that can help you start that conversation with someone if you feel that they may be in trouble.
So don't be afraid to ask directly. Hear them out. All people are looking for is that you start listening. They'll start to catch their own thinking. It's almost like your purpose is just to have them slow down and express what they're feeling. So don't immediately go into trying to fix it or say, no, but you have so many reasons to live. They're not in that place. Just let them get it out. That would be my advice. But I wanted to say that another sign is when people talk about being a burden. So when you have a mom who's really struggling, instead of their children actually being their reason to live, they may actually switch into making comments like, my kids are better off without me. My parents are better off without me. And so you hear people just kind of talking about things in a way that I call it a lie. They're right. It's like lying to them that one is better than the other. And so sometimes even asking questions like, let's go there. What would really happen if your family got this news or if you did something? And then another big thing is, if there are any concerns about someone hurting themselves, we recommend that any means they can use to hurt themselves be removed, locked away, or put away. So we're talking about firearms, medications, alcohol, drugs, prescription drugs, anything that they, sharp items, anything, even razors, like making sure that it's not easily accessible. Because if I am in a heightened state and I'm just losing it, if it's right in front of me, I may go for it. But if it takes me a couple of steps before I get to whatever I could potentially use to hurt myself, there might be that pause in my brain that'll bring me back to something that'll allow me to hold on. So what I recommend when people are feeling overwhelmed, instead of saying one day at a time, I say 30 seconds at a time. All I need to think about is what I'm doing right in this moment. And if you know day to day, it's a struggle. Some people say, I go to sleep, I think I'm okay if I don't wake up the next day. Like, so it may not be that they really want to or are ready to do something to hurt themselves, but they are communicating that there's no interest in continuing to live, and that they wouldn't mind if they get in a car accident and something happens type of thing. So I think communicating, you don't have to do it alone. There are resources. I know you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but these are some options. I do a lot of safety planning, and that involves really looking at different steps before someone gets to the point of crisis. And so really thinking about what are the things that make me feel good on my own. Right? Like if I know a hot shower makes me relax, there's a number of things that I can do for myself that may make me feel a little better, right? Then if that's not working, what's the next step I can take? It may be calling someone I know that I know is a distraction. So I'm going to call my funny sister because she don't even care. She won't ask me how I'm doing. She just goes into a rant about her day, right?
Right.
So that would be the next step. If that's not working, I'm still in a funk, what else can I do it? Now it may be calling a primary care doctor, if that's the closest professional you have, a mental health counseling center, using a hotline where you can connect to someone. And if it's related to something specific, sometimes it's reaching out to a support group. Like if it's, I don't know, diabetes that's stressing you out, it might be a diabetes support group. If it's a sick child that's stressing you out. So there are support groups in like all different areas. So I wanted to walk you through those steps because that's where we have control, right? And so if that's not working, then it does mean I may be calling a 24-hour hotline. And so you kind of progress through some of those steps. What we know for people that are feeling hopeless is that sometimes even those little steps, they don't have the energy to do that. So when you're seeing that it's someone that is really, really sad, to use lay terms, extremely depressed, then sometimes it does take, even if you're just sitting by them without saying a word, like, you don't have to talk to me. I'll be here when you're ready to talk to me, but I'll sit here because right. I know that you're in a rough spot, whatever it is. So there's no black and white. That's why I'm saying it's hard. Suicide becomes their only hope. Like they think it's their only way out. And so sometimes we speak to people that they may be on a high because they think they already have a solution to their pain. Yes. And so that's why I said that it's difficult, but I don't want anyone to feel hopeless here. So it's just important to know that and ride that wave with whoever you're trying to support, or even for yourself to be able to catch yourself and really ask yourself, what is it that I'm thinking? What are the thoughts? We need to identify the thoughts because that's where the feeling comes out of. And sometimes we think it's the other way around. So we have some power over our feelings if we can just pause and really think about what are all the thoughts. And I always say, ask yourself, which ones are lies and which ones are truth?
I like that.
I could talk a little, I could give examples about that, but I'm going to go back to you guys for a moment. There's so much.
I'm sure.
Definitely glad we're having this conversation because so many people die in silence because they feel mental health, asking for help is attention seeking. When it's not. And I know for me personally, I've had my own suicide ideations. I've attempted. And if it wasn't for me reaching out to two friends, I had my plan and everything. I was like, I'm going to do it on the last day of school. They went to the guidance counselor. And I got 302'd, which is I got involuntarily hospitalized.
Involuntary, yep.
But when I went to my family and was crying for help, it was pray about it, which is a big thing in the African American family. We don't look at mental health as mental health. You need to go pray about it. Go ask God. And that's why a lot of times I started isolating myself because of it, because asking my family, it was just like, you'll be all right. Go to church. You need some oil? Let me pray for you. So having this conversation and letting people know you do not have to suffer in silence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And people know to ask a question, save a life. That's one of the my biggest things. Ask a question, save a life. Your strongest friends are usually the ones who are suffering in silence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That was a good point.
That's huge.
I know. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't want to cut anyone off.
I knew Faith was going to come up. I knew. So I think it's also important. We know that there are certain like protective factors, and we didn't talk about that with suicide. And so faith is one of them. Spirituality is one of them. But again, in what way, right? So whatever right. serves you, take it. Whatever doesn't, then it has to be removed. Whatever's building you up, having that support group. And so spirituality is defined as what is the belief that you actually have a purpose on this earth? And so for some, it may come from Christianity, like their faith in God. Others, it's universe. Others, it's they may not know. They just know, like, the hope is I have a purpose here. And so I like to think, first of all, one of my favorite authors says, life is both beautiful and brutal. And I think we have to remember that. So it's brutal. Like it is both. And sometimes it can be both at the same time. And we just need to know we're built, like we can handle it, but mm-hmm. we need to reach out. We don't have to do it alone. So all this independent woman BS completely. I don't know if I'm allowed to say, I guess.
No, you're good. Don't worry about it.
But like, no, we're not meant to do things alone. We're meant to do it together. And we're there, all yeah. connected. And so we definitely need to reach out. And if we don't have friends, family, whatever, like look for it somewhere. So that's the benefit of this day and age, that there are different ways to connect and find it. Keep looking for the person that is going to listen to you and offer the support you need in the way that you feel you need it. I also say that pain is purpose. And if you can get down to that and believe it and ask yourself a lot of questions and ask people a lot of questions and approach everything from a place of curiosity, sometimes that's where the healing really comes up. And so when I said don't numb the feelings, like you got to confront it and know that you're strong enough to handle it. And 30 seconds at a time, like that's all I have to worry about. You
right. start
to realize, oh, wait, I was okay for that moment. If I'm washing dishes, I can decide that I'm not going to get lost in thinking about all my problems. I'm just worried about doing these dishes right now. And so sometimes when I said pain is purpose, sometimes we think purpose is this like long-term thing. I'm talking, no, there's purpose in those 30 seconds. So if all I have in me right now is to feed my child and I don't know how else I'm going to get through whatever else, then that's enough purpose to hold me through for those 30 seconds. I don't have to have a plan or know how I'm going to get out of this hole. And so I think for people that right now may be feeling suicidal or have had their days, for me, that's the message I'm trying to give today. Like, all we need is 1 second at a time.
Thank you.
And if you live in Cheshire County, I want people to know that you do not have to do this alone. If you are struggling, there is the Warm Line, which is consumer run. It's very recovery oriented, and it's actually ran by those who are certified peer specialists. So what a certified peer specialist is someone who self-identifies with those suffering with a mental health diagnosis. And the phone number is 1-866-846-2722. And they are 24 hours a day. They're actually located in Exton. They also have a crisis center. But if you just need to talk to someone, they're open 24 hours. Make that phone call. They'll just sit there and listen to you. You go vent. If you can't talk to your family or your friends and you need that opinion from just somebody who knows what you're going through, who's experienced it, reach out to the Valley Creek Crisis. Reach out to the Warm Line.
Thank you for sharing that information, Lynn. Thank you.
No problem.
We will make sure that more of helpful websites and the 24-hour hotlines are posted. So obviously, if someone is in an emergency, it's 911, but these hotlines are there to prevent an emergency. And that's why they're there to help you talk it out. Or if added medical assistance is needed, then they have the way to do that. And so 3 a.m. in the morning, 2 a.m. in the morning, whatever time, and you don't know what to do, 10 a.m., even if there's people around you, but they don't know how to help, that's what those lines are there for. And now there's many where you can text, you can go online, you can use a chat. And so those are the benefits of technology right now.
Thank you. And we will make sure that all of this information and resources are posted on Chester County Single Mothers Conference Facebook page and Instagram. We definitely want to continue this conversation. Hopefully we'll have another episode and we can bring DeLisi back and she can continue the conversation with us. We definitely want to thank you for today, having this open and honest and real talk with us. It's been great to hear some of your takeaways with the 30 seconds. You're finding your purpose in that 30 seconds, taking a step back, having honest conversation with your kids. I mean, it's wonderful to hear. And I think it's going to be great for our mothers to understand that, you know, it's okay to have a little bit of a meltdown, take a step back, refocus. It's okay to ask for help. We're all here in this together. We don't need to be independent women. We need to be here to help each other and lift each other up. Thank you again, DeLisi, for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you, listeners, for listening again. Lynn, thank you for being here with us.
As always. We will talk,
yeah, it's always great when we're all together, right?
Definitely.
And we will talk to you guys again soon. You guys have a wonderful day. Bye.